He'll make it for sure. Now that's why I backed him on Tab Touch.
Hey, Luke!
Yes, Gene Simmons?
He's probably the best when it comes to this stuff!
Thanks, Gene.
You've got the touch!
You got the touch, you got the power. Got the touch? Choose Tap Touch. Better your bet. Download the app today.
Chances are, you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Hoops Heaven's Basketball Hustle. And we're getting ever so closer to having an NBL championship winning team, Cody. We know who the WNBL championship winners are after we had game three. And now we're one game into the NBL championship series. Melbourne United couldn't have been more emphatic in that game one against the Tasmania Jack Jumpers. So we'll talk about that. But also, the team's not still in this series for the NBL. The Sydney Kings making some noise already with Brian Gorgon as the coach. The Perth Wildcats are starting to lock in their roster as well. The New Zealand Breakers have brought somebody back home. Southeast Melbourne Phoenix have cleared the decks a little bit as well. And Cody, you've got some big news as well with the potentially shortest ever retirement that we've seen. Yeah. So we'll get to that as well. So plenty for us to get through on this week's show. We'll have no trouble filling an hour once more. But of course, it's all possible thanks to Hoop 7 and Tab Touch as always. I'm Chris Pike, but Cody Ellis, you're about to put your body through a lot once more. How are you feeling?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, really good. A lot happening in the basketball world this week, but back with the Senators for myself, and I don't know if you can really call it a retirement because I didn't miss a game, but I'm sure we'll get into that a bit more.
Yes, we'll talk about that more shortly. We'll also go through game one of the championship series between Melbourne and Tasmania in a bit more depth, and also that game three we saw in the WNBL grand final between the Flyers and the Lynx in more detail. But your very first quick reactions, what did you think of what we saw game one, Jack Jumpers and United, and then game three where the Flyers just couldn't have been more emphatic?
Yeah, look, game one was, it was just Melbourne from the get-go. Mm. It was, they came out ready to go. They looked like they were the more energetic team, and it was... couldn't have been more convincing for them. Yeah, WNBL, similar. I think the South side came out ready and round and go. They kind of had the momentum after the way game two finished. And, we touched on it. We thought it was going to be a big win one way or the other. And we thought it was probably heading a little bit more towards South side doing it that way. And it ended up that way, unfortunately, for the Lynx.
Record margin in the end, 34 points for the Flyers. So we'll go through that in a bit more detail. But plenty going on with the teams not still competing right now, Cody. We've got a lot to get through. Let's start with the most recent news and probably the biggest news. So Xavier Cooks, who was MVP last time we played in the NBL two seasons ago, as they won the second of their back-to-back championships. He then went off to the Washington Wizards, which didn't quite work out for him, and now he's been playing in Japan since, but he'll be back at the Sydney Kings. And from all reports, the biggest deal in NBL history. Yeah. He'll be playing under Brian Gorgon. What are your thoughts?
Good to have a guy of Zave's caliber back in the league. You know, obviously it didn't work out in Washington for him, which is, frustrating and upsetting, I'm sure, for himself. But he's enjoying it over in Japan, but is excited to get back to the Kings. I mean, that's a great signing, and that's a huge first step for Brian Gorgon.
It's an interesting one. So he was the MVP last time he played here, so it's hard to argue against his credentials and what he will bring. But if you were going to pick a guy who would have the biggest deal in NBL history, would he be the one that you would pick out?
For me, it'd probably be Bryce. yes. He would probably stick
his hand up. He'd have to be close. Yeah. Surely his deal, he's very close.
Yeah. So, but no, look, I think you look at the stats, and as good as they usually are, I think he certainly brings a lot more to the table than just bothering the stat sheet, which we saw in his MVP season. I think that he is super key, and he's kind of the perfect type of player for this league, which again is what we saw when he was with the Kings last. Yeah. So, look, not overly surprising, and not overly surprising that, a team like Sydney is able to do that.
What do you make of that he hasn't set the world on fire in Japan? So he's gone to play the Chiba Jets after he left the US, and his numbers don't stand out. But like you said, numbers with him aren't always the standout. But 12.3 points, 5.7 rebounds, 2.8 assists, 1.3 blocks, 1.2 steals. And that's over a 28-game sample size now. What do you make of the fact that, at least from the numbers, he hasn't been standing out?
It's tough. I haven't really kept a close eye on the Japanese league, unfortunately. But, I think, from the bits and pieces I've saw, I think shooting is fairly key as well. And that's something that's, not Zabe's strength. It's about the only thing that he's he's not, doesn't set the world on fire with. Mm. So, that's no slouch on those numbers. But, I think it's an interesting one. He obviously didn't play for a chunk of time, sitting with Washington and didn't really get to play any game minutes.
Yeah.
Was played bits and pieces, but never really got into any kind of rhythm or form with them. So first time coming back in playing some decent minutes. So, it was always going to take a bit of time to get his rhythm back. But, I don't think the numbers really tell the story there.
The best comparison we can make is somebody also playing in the same league. So if I compare his numbers to what Nick Kay is doing in the same league, so Nick's putting up 16.5 points a game, 8.8 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.3 steals, 0.6 blocks. So Nick's numbers look a lot better. And in fairness, they're probably competing for one spot on the on the Olympic team.
Yeah.
What do you make of the number comparison?
Nick's been there for a few years now. Yes. He's kind of more in a rhythm. He understands the league better. He knows where he can, be effective. So it's tough to compare. It really is. And again, you don't know to the full extent what their roles within the team are.
Sure.
So, it is tough to compare. But you're right. Those two are probably competing for a spot in that Olympic roster. I think Nick's kind of been a bit of a mainstay in the Australian squads. Yeah. And being one of the main guys willing to stick his hand up every single time that, there's a team put together to compete in a FIBA window. So you'd think at the moment he's probably got one foot in the door, but, with Zave coming in and playing for the head coach of the Boomers, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out.
That was my next question. Coming back to play for Brian Gorgian, who's picking this Olympic team, what does it do for Zave's prospects? Does it help them, or because he won't get to play a game before the Olympics for the Kings, does it not really change a whole lot?
I honestly don't think it changes a whole lot. Mm. Probably a little bit, but I don't think it changes a whole lot. I think Brian Gorgian is not that kind of a guy too much where he would play favourites that way like that. I think he's going to put together the best squad possible.
Mm.
And, the fact that one of those two is probably going to miss out is just proof of how far Australian basketball's come.
If he doesn't get picked for the Olympics, though, does it make it awkward when they come back together for their NBL season? Because I remember there was a similar situation with Andre Lemanis and Adam Gibson when Gibbo came back to the Brisbane Bullets and Andre was coach of the Brisbane Bullets, and there was a little bit of ironing out to do with their relationship after Gibbo had just missed selection for, it would have been the 2016 Olympics at that time. So that was a little bit awkward. I remember speaking to Gibbo about it at the time. They managed to smooth it over. But if he doesn't get picked, does it make it a little bit awkward?
I don't think it should, honestly. Mm. It's especially in that kind of 4-5 spot, like Australia's stacked at the moment.
Yep.
So, I don't think it should be. And, obviously the Olympics is, kind of something that everyone aims for, and that's kind of the pinnacle of where you want to get to. But realistically, I don't think there should be.
Mm.
It's just depends on how it all plays out, I guess. But, it is. It's going to be really interesting to see which way it all goes and how it's picked.
In the big picture, though, what does it mean for the Sydney Kings to have the MVP back, the championship-winning captain back?
Yep.
And we talked about when they signed Brian Gorgian, he becomes the face of the club.
Yep.
Now you've got your captain back to be the face of the club. So these two instantly become the face of this, I guess, new era for the Kings.
Yeah, they do. And it's huge for the Kings, and I'm sure Zave was top of their priority list.
Yep.
He would have been even when he went over to play for Washington. Yeah. So, look, it's massive, and the fact that they could get this deal done so quickly and so early, the season's not even done yet, so it is a lot of credit to, I'm sure, Brian Gorgian and then, all the guys behind the scenes at the Kings. So, heck of a signing, and certainly a big way to kick off Brian Gorgian's tenure.
Yes. Well, he couldn't get a better signing.
No.
Could not start off with a bigger bang. Perth Wildcats have also wasted no time in signing up Christian Doolittle for next season. That means already their two of their three import spots are taken up, because Bryce will still be an import next season. That citizenship won't be coming through in time again for next season. He had a good season. It was up and down at different point. What do you make of the Wildcats instantly re-signing him?
Look, I think it's good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you kind of roll the dice a bit with imports, kind of no matter what level you're at. And I think Doolittle was really good for them. Mm-hmm. You know, he was one of my favourite players to watch throughout the season.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't quite right after his concussion. Mm. He never really got back into the same rhythm. And I just think his versatility is huge. Yeah. And I think the fact that he can guard 1 through 5 is massive for them. And to have an import be able to do that is huge.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good signing. I really do. And, you know, the fact that he wanted to stay is big.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure there would have been some other teams around that would have thrown some money at him. So, yeah, look, it's really good for the Cats that they've gone and signed him early.
You're right. It is a big vote of confidence for the club and for John, really, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Because he's someone who would have been able to play wherever he wanted almost in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of the NBA, because he's that talented and that versatile. It's a big vote of confidence for what the Wildcats are doing.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's kind of getting a bit of continuity throughout the team as well. And, you know, if you can do that with imports, that's, you know, even better.
What it does mean, though, is they've only got one import spot now to play with. In my mind, I don't know if Ty Webster, as good as he was at times this season, is going to be a starting point guard on a team that wins a championship. So there could be an argument you can make that they need an import point guard, but I think you need a wing in that Jordan Usher role, and they'll be hoping to upgrade on Jordan Usher, but I think you need someone to play that role to add the athleticism and shooting and what Jordan did when he was playing well.
Yep.
But, gee, I don't know if they're going to get as lucky as they got with Alex Sarr as well. So they might need another big as an import. They've only got one spot to play with. Where do you look to fill it?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because there are some big holes in that roster now.
Mm.
You know, I think, you know, you're obviously not going to strike gold the way you did with Alex Sarr.
Yeah.
You know, that was huge for them.
Mm.
And, you know, he came in and while he didn't set the world on fire, he did exactly what they needed him to do. Yeah, it's tough. I think Ty can play the point guard. I think if they've got the right pieces around him, I think Ty is a good fit to play their point guard. And we saw when he was playing well, they were playing well.
Yep.
You know, that middle stretch of the season where they just went on that big roll is when he was out there running the team really well.
Yes.
We saw towards the end of the season he started getting foul trouble because the team started to go at him a little bit and couldn't kind of stay on the floor as long as he would have wanted to and as long as really would have wanted him out there. So, yeah, look, I think you probably do need to fill that kind of wing spot, that Jordan Usher, kind of get a bit of an upgrade on what he was.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's tough because they do need a center. Keanu is kind of their guy right now, but
is he better as a four man?
Yeah, I think he is better at the four spot because if you can have a guy like Keanu out there in your four spot and have another big bruiser, then that's tough to guard.
Especially if he can shoot like he did in game one of that series.
Well, that's it, and I'm hoping that kind of carries over and that confidence carries over to next season for them.
If you're them, do you just hope that you do find a next star that can play as well as an import? I mean, that can be your fourth import if you get that next star. It's almost luck because you have to sort of take what Liam Santamaria finds for you and then take your pick of the draw. But if you can find a next star good enough to be an import, that could solve a lot of their problems.
Oh, it certainly could. It certainly could. And look, Liam's done an unbelievable job of getting talent down here. Yes. So I'm sure there'll be a good pool of talent that he finds for this off-season. But again, you know, you never know what's going to come through. So it's tough. It's tough because you've got to start making calls pretty soon.
Yes. All right, so we'll wait and see what the Wildcats do. But your least favourite subject, as we've been doing this show, Cody, is talking about yourself.
Yep.
But unfortunately, you might have to just for this once once more. Now, our very first episode of this season was you announcing your retirement because you need a break from basketball. Yep. What you've done since then is not touch a basketball for the next 6 months.
Yep.
So you've had a break, even if you haven't necessarily missed a game. But were you just missing it too much?
Yeah, look, it's been an interesting couple of weeks. So the reason I decided to stop playing was for the mental side of things. Physically, it's fine. That's not an issue. But yeah, just completely mentally drained from basketball in general.
Yes.
And, you know, once I shot my last shot and we finished off the game at Joondalup at the end of last year, didn't even think about picking up our basketball or didn't even think about getting on a court.
Yep.
You know, this was the only basketball I thought about, and it was had absolutely nothing to do with me. So, you know, like I said, it was 6 months worth of not even thinking about it. And then all of a sudden just randomly got a bit of an itch back. And then, look, I went and watched the boys play a scratch match last Tuesday. And, yeah, had a good chat to some people around the club and Coops. And, yeah, look, pieces kind of fell into line a little bit. And here we are. So, yeah, look, I think the last 6 months has been a really good kind of mental reset for me. And something that I needed more than I thought. So, you know, as much as I don't like missing trainings and I don't like, you know, missing preseason and stuff like that, I think had I have just continued on with it, I wouldn't be in any kind of decent headspace. So it, I wouldn't be in a good position right now. So, yeah, look, at the time I thought I was ready to just completely step away. And, yeah, look, I knew the itch would come back. I just didn't think it'd be this quick. So I'm pretty happy to be back after that little break and not having to think about basketball for a while.
We talked about how the last game you played was that playoff game against the Wolves and how it was good that you got to at least say that you finished off hitting the last shot that you took. But at the same time, losing in the first round of the playoffs to one of your rivals probably wasn't the way you wanted to go out. So in hindsight, are you happy that now won't be your last moment in basketball?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, pretty cool to say that you made your last shot. Yes. Not many people get to say that. So
better to do it in a championship game, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be. Would be for sure. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, look, it's a tough one. You know, last season wasn't a great season all round. And yeah, look, kind of does leave a bit of a sour taste in your mouth for sure. So no, look, happy to be back.
Speaking of the Wolves, what's it going to be like playing them this season?
Yeah.
The first time that you come up against Caleb Davis especially, but also Ethan Elliott.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I already had a chat to those two boys. So, no, look, they're two of my favourite people. So it's going to be very strange, but I'm looking forward to it because it's going to be a lot of fun.
What about the team you're going to be part of? So the Senators have now signed Zach Gattoner, you know, fresh off another NBL season at the Sydney Kings and fresh off being part of the Geraldton Buccaneers Championship last season. Also, Michael Harris, fresh off his season at the Perth Wildcats, and Todd Withers. It's not often we get an NBL import to come play in the league. It's a pretty exciting team under Andrew Cooper you're joining.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's very exciting. And, you know, I think we've certainly got all the pieces to make a good run for this season. So, you know, if we can stay healthy and everyone get on the same page and be willing to buy into to Coop's system and what he wants out of us, then, yeah, look, we'll definitely be a bit of a force. But, look, there's some elite teams around the league this year. There's lots of chopping and changing around, and it's going to be a fun season. NBL One West just keeps getting better and better.
Is it scary to think that as we record this, you've now just had your first practice session and it's only just over a week away until the season starts? How are you feeling?
It's a bit anxiety filling, to be honest with you. Yeah, look, had my first session last night, and again, after not even looking at a basketball for 6 months, I kind of felt like a baby giraffe out there. So I don't think it'll take me too long to get back into the swing of things, but it was certainly interesting last night.
Pretty happy though that you've made the right decision now. Does it feel right in your gut that you're back playing?
Yeah, I think so. It does, and Lauren and Chase were pretty excited for it too. Has always been awesome, and her view on it is let me do what I want, you know, whatever I want to do is she'll support. So it's I'm very lucky to have a wife like that. And then Chase, it's just like, yeah, I just want you to keep playing. So
well, the older he gets, the more he gets to appreciate seeing you out there.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I do think that when he was younger, he was always out there running around and that sort of stuff. So towards the end of last season, he was sitting there and getting into the games a lot more. So I think, you know, that, like you said, the older he gets, the more he kind of understands that it's good level basketball and that it's fun to watch. And yeah, so it's pretty cool.
You'll also get to be out there for the 200th game of Jay Thwaites.
I know. I am excited for that, and that's awesome. I'm very happy for him, that'll be fun.
All right, Cody. The best news I'll tell you today is that you don't have to talk about yourself anymore. So let's take our first break. We'll hear from Tap Touch. And when we come back, let's go back and have a look at game one of the NBL Championship Series and game three of the WNBL Grand Final.
Sounds good.
He'll make it for sure. That's why I backed him on Tap Touch.
You got the touch. You got the power. Got the touch? Choose Tap Touch. Better your bet. Download the app today.
Imagine what you could be buying instead.
Okay, back on Hoop 7's Basketball Hustle. I'm here with Cody Ellis once again. Let's get into the NBL Championship Series, Cody. We did our preview last week, and you were pretty bullish about the chances of the Tasmania Jack Jumpers. Mm. Before we go through what happened in Game 1, Melbourne won 104-81 on Sunday at John Cain Arena. Are you starting to doubt your selection?
A little bit. It was odd to see Tasmania come out the way they did. You know, they played probably about as bad as we've seen them play.
We haven't seen them blown out at all season. If they lose, they lose in a close game. Yeah. This is the first time we've seen them.
It's a double-digit loss for them this season.
I think it is.
Yeah, look, and Melbourne played unbelievable. They played about as good as we've seen them this year. Mm. So, yeah, interesting. I don't think we'll see that same Tasmania team again for these next few games. But, yeah, look, they certainly didn't start off very well, did they?
No. The Jack Jumpers, to me, feel like they're a very emotional group. Mm-hmm. They like to get themselves worked up and fired up, and Scott Roth likes to as well. And they were playing off emotion coming out off the win against Perth in Perth. But to me, Melbourne is the complete opposite. They're a very level-headed group. They try to take the emotion out of it as much as they can. The Jack Jumpers felt a little bit on edge coming into the game. I know Scott Roth was unhappy with Dean Vickerman talking about his little island that he was defending. I don't know if there was as much in that as was potentially made out. I don't think Dean meant it as disrespectfully as it might have been reported, and people might have been trying to fire Scott up and get his reaction, which is the world we live in. But it felt like the emotional toll that the Jack Jumpers were riding kind of got to them a little bit.
A little bit. I mean, it was it was a big emotional win. Whenever the Cats, and you know, we saw that pour out of Scott Roth at the post game interview and all that sort of stuff. So, look, certainly very emotional for them. It's a tough one because I feel like you said, like they are an emotional team, but I still feel like they've got so many level headed guys on that roster.
Sure.
You know,
yes.
I mean, even watching Scott Roth on the sideline, his demeanor doesn't change at all. It's unless it's something super blatant and he's going at the refs at something. Yeah. Like, he's very much just very level-headed. Yeah. And we see that with some of their main guys, you know, Milton Doyle. Yes. He's one of the more level-headed guys around the league. You look at a guy like Jack Mavey, and he's the one that really needs to get up and about, and he gets the crowd involved and he gets his team going that way, you know, on that emotional roller coaster. Obviously tough to do on the road, right? Yep. Obviously tough to do on the road. And, it was a quick turnaround for both teams. I actually thought that, you know, Tassie would be the team that came out with a bit more energy. Mm. So we always knew Delhi from Melbourne would come out with more energy than anybody. But, I mean, he just dragged the rest of the team with him.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he does. And, look, Melbourne looked really good and Tassie just didn't.
Melbourne couldn't have played better. This was a perfect example of the way they like to play. So 23-point win, but they shot – I mean, they shot 49% from the field to 40% from Tasmania, but they also went 14-28 from three, and Tassie only 8-18, both teams similar from the free throw line. The big differential for me was the pace the game was played at was on Melbourne's terms.
Yeah.
18 fast break points to zero.
Yeah, it's wild.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Mm. You know, I think that Melbourne did a really good job of clamping down on defense and running out of it. Mm. I think guys like Delhi just – the tenacity, and then, you know, you got Shea, same thing, LT in the lanes and getting deflections and steals and then running down the other end for dunks. Mm. And, you know, there was one play that you kind of saw Travers' NBA athleticism where it was kind of tipped at half court and he just burst through, got the ball and was 6 meters ahead of the next closest guy, you know, while he was dunking it. So, you know, just that burst of speed from a guy his size is something that is certainly troubling for other teams. Mm. And I think that Melbourne did, while they put up 104 points, to hold Tassie to 81 is very impressive.
Chris Golding as well.
Dean
Vickerman always talks about how if he takes 10 or more three-point attempts in a game, we very rarely lose, even if he only makes two or three of them. If he's making himself that aggressive, he attracts so much of the defense that it has a positive effect on everything they do. And he caught fire at times in the game, hit six of them, 22 points. And, gee, they're almost impossible to stop when he's shooting like that.
Oh, yeah. Some of the ones he was making were just unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, none more difficult than the corner three hit where it didn't go below his eyebrows.
Yes.
You know, I don't think lots of people understand how difficult that kind of a shot is. Mm. But, yeah, look, he just...
It's almost like a shot put, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is, you know, and it doesn't look any different. For elite shooters like that, it doesn't look any different than if he was feet set and had all the time in the world. So, look, he was unbelievable, and he kind of showed what he's shown all season. And he leapt a few greats on the all-time three-point list. So, pretty big game from him, and something that isn't the least bit surprising because he's kind of built for these big moments.
I think he's up to 125 threes on the season,
yep.
which is the most ever in a 40-minute game season. And I think he's 19 behind Shane Heal's record of 144 in a season. If this series goes to five games, he's got four games to go. He needs to make 20 more to set a new season record. You give him a chance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way he shot the ball in that game and the way he's shot it all season, I mean, this is his best season from the three-point line, which is scary because... Mm. He's had some big-time seasons. So, yeah, look, give him every chance. I think if it does go to five, then there's every chance that he can do that. I mean, he can have a game where he comes out and knocks down 10.
Yeah, good.
You know what I mean? Like, I think as good defensively as the Jack Jumpers are, they don't have that same kind of guy in, say, Wani, who's going to stick.
Yeah, they don't have a lockdown defender, do they? Yeah.
Not overly. I think not at that position anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, which is probably why he shot like this, because he finally felt a bit more comfortable out on the floor. So, yeah, look, there's certainly a chance, and that'd be a pretty cool thing to see.
The big man battle as well. We talked about how Sam Froehling absolutely had the better of his matchup with both Joe Lualuchul and Ariel Hutporti in the semi-final series. Were you then surprised to see how those two guys from Melbourne dominated Will Magnay and Marcus Lee to the point where Scott Roth didn't want either of them out? Well, he couldn't have Will out there because of foul trouble, and he didn't want Marcus Lee out there because he wasn't delivering. It was a complete domination by the two Melbourne bigs, and JLA finished with 20 points, 11 rebounds, and Ariel Hakporti only played just over 12 minutes, but they were plus 20 when he was out on the court, 7.7 rebounds. Were you surprised how dominant the Melbourne pair were?
Look, not overly. And that's more coming from the Melbourne side of things, not the Tassie side of things. So, look, those two would have heard all the, you know, they got dominated and that kind of thing. And they would have made an emphasis to really be impactful. You know, I don't think that it's an interesting one because those two are two of the better combined big men in the league, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, coming up against Magnay and Lee, who are two of the more dominant big man duo in the league as well. I mean, they just kind of had their number from the very get-go. Yeah. They kind of got Will in foul trouble early. Yep. I think Lee might have got one or two early as well and then didn't really play a whole lot. No. We saw Fabian Krcicevic a lot, considering I don't think he even played in the last series. He might have got a couple minutes here and there, but it's something that you got to put pressure on the defenders. And, you know, the way JLA and Hakporti play, it's hard to defend.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we saw a flash of it from JLA in game two in Illawarra where he came out super aggressive. But then, you know, Sam kind of went at him on the other end and that kind of slowed them down a bit. So Magnay and Lee aren't really the two super throw the ball down low and go to work.
No.
They're the dump off finish type guys, which we saw with Magnay. I mean, he had 6 points in the first like three possessions.
Yeah.
And
they're more likely to catch a lob and finish, aren't they, more than go to work in the block?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's very different to defend that. You know, JLA and Hakporti are more likely to be those help guys rather than fighting in the post for position and that kind of thing. And that's where I think Will Magnay needs to evolve his game a bit and kind of have that back down, back to the basket type post moves if he's going to be a legitimate big man.
It's interesting, isn't it? So Magnay and Lee, For pretty much the whole second half of the season, they've been basically filling up the entire 40 minutes between them. It's been very rare where at least one of them hasn't been on the floor. But combined in this game, they only played 24 minutes between them. They only had 12 points and 8 rebounds between them. If you're those two, this week, are you pretty determined to bounce back?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we've you know, sung the praises of those two for quite some time. And, I mean, look, end of the day, those two got dominated this first game. And for Tassie to bounce back and get a win on their home floor, those two have to be super influential. You know, we've seen Magne have some monster games and, you know, we've seen Lee have some really good games too. So this is a big bounce back game for them for sure.
Jordan Crawford is another one that they need more out of.
Yeah.
It's fascinating what's happened. So he had a really good season. And I think you had him in your all second team from memory. And he was, I mean, he was right in the mix. He was unlucky to not get in the official NBL team. He was that good all season for them. He had a pretty good first game against the Wildcats. I think he had 19 points from memory.
Yep.
Since then, so the last two games against the Wildcats and then this game, one against Melbourne, he's had a combined 12 points. So he's averaging 4 points a game. He shot 5 of 28 from the field, 2 of 10 from 3, and in that game one, just 7 points, 3 of 13, 1 of 4 from 3. What's happened?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's not a not a good time of year to all of a sudden be in a slump, unfortunately. He's a good enough player that all he really needs to see is a few in a row go down, and he'll probably be back.
Yeah.
But he's not been as aggressive either.
Yep.
You know, it's been really interesting. And
well, even 28 shots over 3 games, that's not a lot for him.
No, not at all. I think, you know, that's, I mean, his partner in crime, McDonald, has been unbelievable and stepped up very well.
Yeah.
But you still want your star import to be able to deliver. Mm-hmm. And yeah, look, he's probably a big reason why they haven't been as dominant. And they need him to be at the level he was at throughout the year to win a championship and to at least even the score this week.
Easier said than done. So when you're now in a slump like this, how do you get yourself out of it?
It's really hard. It's really hard because, you know, every shot you start to put more emphasis on it and it's like, well, this one needs to go down, and you start tweaking your shots here and there and doing little bits and pieces that you wouldn't usually do. So, yeah, look, I think, like you said, easier said than done. I think if he can figure out how to get to the foul line and get some, you know, get some good looks that way, that'll help him. But yeah, I mean, he's just got to figure it out. He's got to figure it out quick.
That's a great point. He hasn't made a free throw in those 3 games either.
No. Yeah. So if he can get to the foul line and really kind of get his eye in from there and get those cheap, easy little buckets, then who knows? That could turn the tide for him. But like I said, he needs to get out of it pretty quick.
From a Melbourne perspective, we've talked all season about how they're the deepest team in the league, and that's what's going to make them so tough. So we talked about their two big guys, but even Kyle Bowen comes back and
unreal.
He backs those guys up outstandingly. We talked about how good Luke Travers was. Yep. And then he's even got Tanner Krebs, who comes in and gives him some really good chop outs. You got Ian Clark and Chris Golding, who come in and shoot the way they do. And then you've got Dalian Shayili that do what they do. This team is just so deep, and it's no surprise to see what they did in game one, but it's really tough to see them losing 3 of the next 4 games to not win this championship.
Yeah, and look, that was always the thing going in, right, is how deep Melbourne are, and when they figure it out, it was never a if, it was always a when they figure it out. I don't think there's any other team that could even challenge them.
Nah.
So we kind of saw that towards the start of the year and saw how dominant they were and faltered a bit towards the end of the season, but it's tough to stay at the top and keep winning the way that you do.
Still finished 3 games clear on top,
exactly,
though, didn't they?
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, it's not like it was a big fall off by any stretch of the imagination.
And the amazing thing is they never lost consecutive games.
No.
Yeah.
And that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that is a very impressive effort. And yeah, they're going to have to do that if they're going to lose a championship. So, look, it is tough to see, but, you know, championship series are a lot different than others. Yeah. So if Tassie can go home and even it Friday night, then Sunday becomes a big one.
All right, we'll save that for the end of the show, and we'll get your predictions for this weekend, Cody. Thanks to Tab Touch. WNBL Grand Final. So last week we talked about the first two games and that amazing game two where the Perth Lynx missed a chance at the end, and in the end, that's where they probably lost this series because going back to game three in Melbourne, as it turned out, the South Side Flyers were too experienced, probably too big, and ultimately too good. So they won 115-81, record margin in a WNBL grand final. complete domination.
Yeah.
From the Flyers. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, there was no real glimpse of – there was a little bit of it, but no real glimpse of the Lynx coming back had in game two. Perth really needed to get that game two and finish it. Going back to Melbourne was probably always going to go Southside's way, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I think just the way Southside played, they shot the crap out of the ball.
It was especially
in that third quarter.
Yep.
My goodness, I feel like they couldn't miss, and they hit four or five straight threes.
And some of those are from their bigs. Yeah. When your backup big, so Carly Ernst is coming in behind Lauren Jackson and Mercedes Russell. I think there was a 2-minute stretch where she hit three straight. Nothing you can do about it.
No, absolutely not. And look, it was, yeah, I mean, that's really tough. That's really tough. She did. She came in and kind of, it was already looking tough for the Lynx, but when she came in and just knocked three back to back, it was almost over.
Yes.
And then Beck Cole coming in and making a couple big plays as well, and one, and I think she also hit a three, and they really looked like they knew that game three and the championship was on the line, and Lynx just ran out of legs, honestly.
Yeah.
They really ran out of legs, and It's really tough to bounce back from a loss the way they lost.
And when their game style is based on playing themselves to exhaustion, they want to run the opposition off their legs, but maybe there gets a point where you've got no run left in in your own legs.
Yeah, well, especially with short turnarounds. Yeah. You know, there's only so much you can do. It doesn't matter how fit you are.
Yep.
So, look, obviously, feel for the Lynx girls and one that, I mean, they had it won. They had it won here in Perth, which is funny to say when they never actually led at any point in the game. But, brutal one. But it's pretty cool to see Lauren Jackson go out like that.
She's an amazing story. Yeah. So she was retired for 5 years, came back to play in the NBL 1 to start with, and then came back to play for the Opals to start with and help that team win the bronze medal, came back to the Flyers last season, and then she did her Achilles.
Yeah.
At 42 years of age, how do you come back from that, do the rehab, come back and help your team win a championship? She's now won 6 of them, and 25 years in between her first and her last. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, she's the GOAT for a reason,
you
know. I mean, you can – if you don't know all her accolades, I'd go look them up and almost a novel, you know. It's just not a quick read because, look, she's just been so impressive her entire career. And, to have 5 years off and then come back and – play to the same level that she did is so impressive, and you know, to be able to come back from an injury like that, especially at that age, is again just ridiculous to even think about.
And having had 2 kids, I mean, you're playing as a dad, but you didn't have to go through the physical toll.
Definitely didn't. It's a different world. So just so impressive, and can't think of a better send off for her.
We talked about Xavier Cooks going to the Olympics. If you're Basketball Australia, do you do everything you can to give Lauren the support that she needs for her kids to be with her in Paris? Do you want her going to the Olympics?
Look, I think it ultimately probably comes down to her. You know,
I think she said she wants to go, but only if her kids are there and supported.
Yeah, look, I think it's a tough one. But, you know, it's not often you get a Lauren Jackson banging around. So it's something that I'm sure there'll be discussions around, and if they can do it, then I think they really need to.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Perth Lynx, because we talked last year how you can't write these scripts, and unfortunately the script was so similar.
Yeah.
So we talked about how 2 years ago they won that game one, this year they won game one, both by similar margins.
Yeah.
They'd lose in remarkable circumstances in both games, at home in game two, and then get blown out in both game threes back in Melbourne. How do you deal with it, especially for the coaching staff? So it's been the same 3 coaching staff. So Ryan Petrick, the head coach, Brad Robbins and Nat Burden, his assistants. So there's not too many players that are the same, probably only Mackenzie Clinch-Hoykart and Alex Tubatoni who were there for both those series. Yeah. But as a club and as a coaching staff, how do you get your heads around it?
Yeah, it's tough. The feeling of deja vu would be pretty crazy for them, unfortunately. And, yeah, look, I'm not sure how you – bounce back. I think it's tough, right? I mean, you lose your star import for 8 games and you go 1-7 in those 8 games. And, you know, that's something that you just can't prepare for. You know, not only do you lose that player for, you know, whatever amount of time, you kind of get your different rotations and you finally get those down pat, and then all of a sudden you get
everyone's role changes again. Yeah,
it does. So trying to find roles and everyone kind of playing to that role, and look, it's the pros. Like, you've got to be able to adapt and do that kind of a thing, but it really does throw a spanner in the works. And I mean, they came out and absolutely blitzed the semis, you know. Yes. they looked unbelievable.
Yep.
And then obviously Southside's a completely different beast, but yeah, look, it's a tough one. I'm not sure how you bounce back. You've just kind of got to look forward and see what you can change and what you needed, and you know how you could have won the series and kind of adjust that way. It's something that I'm sure they're already looking at and have looked at already too many times. Yeah.
I want to get your thoughts on Annalee Maley, not necessarily to talk about how what happened at the end of Game 2 played on her mind in Game 3, and she did struggle in Game 3, yes. But I don't want to necessarily focus on that, but she emotionally talked in the presentations after the game about how thankful she is to what she's found at the Lynx and how it's helped her rediscover her love of basketball. And I want to get your insights, because you've been in a similar situation throughout your career. So whatever happened with her at the end in Bendigo was ugly on both fronts, so it left a sour taste in her mouth and in the club's mouth, to the point where the work I've been doing for the Lynx, I'm told that you're not allowed to mention her past with Bendigo, because there's a non-disclosure agreement there between the two that they don't talk about each other.
Yep, fair enough.
So when you go through something like that, it's natural that your love of basketball diminishes, and she has tried out a couple of times for the WNBA and it hasn't quite worked out. She's had hits and misses with the Australian Opals as well. So she's had a pretty crazy up and down ride with basketball, and you're in a good position to talk about that. But she feels, you know, this series didn't end how she wanted, but it looks like she's found a place in Perth where it's led to a happy place in her life, and that's why she wants to stay to play locally in the NBL 1 as well. Can you add any insights into all of that for her?
Yeah, look, it's really tough when stuff like that goes on, that whether it's in your control, out of your control, for whatever reason, right? It's tough, because then all of a sudden basketball isn't at the front of the priority list, right? All of a sudden all this noise is there, and you know, you're thinking about certain things and what could have been, what happened, what could have changed. And yeah, look, basketball takes a back step, unfortunately. Mm. And you know, you don't see it too often, but it does happen. Mm. And it's a frustrating thing to be involved in, because then you start doubting yourself. You know, you start doubting, why am I even playing? Mm. You know, why am I putting myself through this kind of thing? And look, I think that she obviously very happy here in Perth, which is awesome. Mm. And Perth has adopted her, I guess, as part of the family, which is great. And it's no surprise, Perth is a great place to be and great place to live. So, you know, there's lots of people that come over here and don't want to leave. So, you know, I think on top of being part of the NBL broadcast team as well is something that is really good. And I think she improved throughout the year with that as well. You know, I think that having her on the broadcast was great. And look, it's good to hear that the mindset and the mental space seems to be a lot better, because that's such an important part of basketball. Mm. So obviously not the way Annalee wanted to finish the season, and obviously we saw it, what happened in Game 2 kind of affect the way that it was played in Game 3, unfortunately. So, but as long as the mental side of things are starting to look up, that's always a positive.
Last thing on the Perth Lynx. So Basketball WA announced at the start of this season that this would be the last season they're willing to finance the running of the club. I just don't know if there's going to be a white knight that comes in and wants to take over the ownership, because unfortunately the WNBL model right now is a money loser if somebody comes in to do that. I don't think the WNBL can afford to not have a team in Perth though at the same time. What happens?
I don't know. Mm. I don't know. I mean, so many people calling for Larry to take over the league, and I mean, look what he did with the NBL from where it was to where it is now.
Unfortunately, you need Basketball Australia to be willing to let him take over, and right now they're not, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it's a tough one, right? Because it's like, well, if you're hemorrhaging money and, you know, that's why you're saying, okay, we're not going to all of a sudden take ownership of this team, or we're not going to fund this team. Mm. Why wouldn't you have someone that, if he is, and look, there might be other people other than Larry that are, that are willing to come and take the league over, but why wouldn't you be willing to hand it over? Mm. You know, I think that, again, like I said, the perfect example is the NBL from it where it was to where it is now. Yep. You know, it was at a point where you had Andrew Gaze saying the NBL needs to shut down for a couple of years and reset.
And it almost did.
Yeah.
If you go back to sort of that 2009, 2010 period, there was a chance we didn't have a season at all.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, so it's crazy. And the fact that, you know, you put some things in place that, you know, at the time might be tough to do and get through. But if you get through those tough little stretches at the start, who knows what the possibilities could be. So I'm hoping something happens, because you're right. I don't think the league could do without a team over here.
No. Does Basketball WA just have to suck it up and maintain the ownership while it has to?
I think so, unfortunately. Mm. And it's something that obviously needs to be a work in progress going forward. Mm. But I think for the time being, they need to, unfortunately.
All right, Cody. That was a lot for us to get through as well. We've got a couple more things to talk about what's happening across the league. We'll get your thoughts on hopefully what's just game two and game three of the championship series, not the end of it.
Yep.
But I'll get your thoughts on that after the break.
Sounds good.
He'll make it for sure. That's why I backed him on Tap Touch.
You got the touch. You got the power. Got the touch? Choose Tap Touch. Better your bet. Download the app today.
Imagine what you could be buying instead.
Okay, back on Hoop 7's Basketball Hustle. I'm here with Cody Ellis once again this week. With only two teams still playing in the NBL, Cody, it means every other team has turned their attention to next season. We talked about Xavier Cooks already returning to the Sydney Kings, Christian Doolittle re-signing at the Perth Wildcats, but there's a little bit of other movement around the place, even before free agency officially starts. Didn't get a chance to talk about this last week. So Sam Menenga has left the Cairns Taipans, even though he had a year left on his contract, and he's going back home to play at the New Zealand Breakers. On the surface, it looks like a great signing for the Breakers, and it must be fun going back home for him as well, because if you're taking his time at college, taking this season in Cairns, he hasn't been home for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep, I totally understand that one.
Yes.
look, it's good. I think a few people are confused how New Zealand ended up with him, seeing as it's not free agency, but New Zealand...
Once he's uncontracted.
Yeah, so New Zealand bought out his second season at Cairns, from what I understand. So they were able to sign him that way. Yep. Yeah, and obviously Cairns were willing to let him go and go back home. So, look, big move for him. That's awesome. Mm. I think he'll probably thrive in that New Zealand system. Kind of that bit of a position they need, really, that kind of big man shooter.
Yeah.
He had a very up and down season in Cairns, and looked like he kind of fell in and out of favour with 40 a little bit, which we've seen with some players throughout his tenure at Cairns. Huge for him. I think he'll feel a lot more comfortable at home, it's good for him.
It's an incredible show of faith, isn't it, from the Breakers?
Yeah.
Because not only now do they take on the fact that they had to pay out the rest of his contract at the Taipans, but they also got to pay him as well because he has to be able to live. But it must feel good as a player to know that the club you're going to has that much faith in you.
For sure. I mean, that's huge faith from a club. And for a club like New Zealand, I think they've kind of lived off that kind of motto and you know, the faith that they have in their team and whoever's on their roster. So not overly surprising, but good on the club and good on Menenga.
Not to put too much pressure on him, but speaking to Modi a little bit and replacing Tom Abercrombie on the court is one thing, but replacing a guy that has been the heart and soul of your club, has lived and breathed the Breakers, and that he's the one that sets your culture and sets everything. Bringing a guy back to his hometown like this with Sam, not to put too much immediate pressure on him, but over the long term, he could become the face of the club from a New Zealand perspective.
For sure. I think he's kind of one of those guys that could certainly become that. And I wouldn't expect him to leave anytime soon.
Yeah.
I think the fact that he was willing and wanted to come home so desperately is certainly plays a part in that. And yeah, look, with Tom moving out now, there's room for that. So I think that he's probably the perfect player to slot into that little role.
We talked about this late in the season. It was fascinating to see what happened to him at the Taipans, because there was a period mid-season where he was one of the best players in his position in the league, not only for a rookie playing his first season. And we thought, you look at that Next Gen Award, he was someone that could definitely put his hand up for that. There was a 7-game stretch where he was averaging 13.7 points, 6.9 rebounds a game. And I think there was a game against Melbourne, from memory, where I think it was 6 threes that he hit.
Yeah, couldn't miss.
And then all of a sudden he fell out of complete favour. Yeah. And there was over the next 6 games after that, virtually unsighted on the court, 2.6 points, 1.5 rebounds, his minutes virtually diminished completely. What do you think happened?
Look, I'm not sure. I think it was after that Melbourne game where he had that big game where he just fell out of favour. And whether 40 was trying to send a message like to him saying that, you know, he doesn't want him to rely on that 3-point shot and he needs to be doing other stuff. I'm not sure. It's really tough, and that's tough on a first year player as well. First professional season, and look, mind games are all part of being a pro as well. Mm. So like, you've got to be able to adjust and deal with that kind of thing, because it happens everywhere. So that's not something new by any stretch of the imagination. But he really did. He fell out of favor, and you know, to be going from just under 14 and 7 to 2.5 and 1.5 to finish out the season is that's a big fall off. Yeah. So whether it was 40 just kind of falling out of favor with him a little bit, or something happened at practice, and because he barely played after it.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like he was out there and not producing. Yeah. He just barely played. Yeah. I mean, he had a few DMPs, I'm pretty sure, well.
Yeah. I don't think that'll be happening at the Breakers, though.
No, I don't think
with him, Cody. Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, this is fascinating as well. So after one season, they've re-signed Alan Williams to a 3-year contract, and I don't know if you remember when we did our mid-season award predictions, I thought he was playing that well that he was my MVP halfway through the season. He virtually didn't play after that with his knee, and it has been an ongoing problem with his knee. I believe it might have been a problem from his agent's point of view where he didn't iron in this contract as securely as he could have, but the Phoenix have found a way to release him. He's almost become the face of the league in a lot of ways. He's been commentating, he's been doing a lot of things promoting the league, but he's no longer going to be a Southeast Melbourne player at least. What do you make of that?
Yeah, look, that's something that took me a bit by surprise for sure. Because you're right, he's become a bit of a face of the league and you know, face of the club, you know, along with Mitch Creek, and you know, he was on all the commentary teams and he was very loud and outspoken in a good way, you know, on social media and all that kind of thing. So look, I think it's just a tough situation because Phoenix have now, for pretty much every single one of their seasons since they've come in, have dealt with a ridiculous amount of injuries.
Yeah, they have.
Whether they're trying to completely get rid of guys that are overly injury prone, he would be top of the list, unfortunately. Yep. For as good as he is when he's on the floor, he's on the floor about half the time.
Exactly.
You know, so it makes it tough because, again, you know, didn't have him towards the end of the season when, you know, the point end of the season, which is where you want them. So tough one, very tough one. But, wouldn't surprise me if you saw him somewhere else in the league.
That was going to be my next question. Does somebody else take the chance on him?
I think so. I think the potential for him to be, you know, that dominant, which we've seen, is something that is probably very appealing to a couple of clubs. I think that, you know, he could be a perfect fit in a lot of teams. I think he'd make teams better straight away. But again, the strength and conditioning and the medical staff all need to be on point and making sure that he's good to go and he's not going to miss a big chunk of time.
If I had to make a prediction, I could imagine seeing him in Queensland somewhere next season.
Yep, that's a big one. Yeah, so for sure.
I would say if there's no Aaron Baines in Brisbane, he'd be a good fit there.
Yep.
But if the Taipans could find a way to afford him, I could imagine Adam Ford loving having a guy like that on his team too.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And look, like I said, he would slot into pretty much any team and be effective straight away. So, yeah, no, that's a big call, actually. That's a good call. I didn't even really have any thoughts on where he would land, if that is the case. But
it's someone that clearly loves the country and loves the league. It'd be a shame to lose him, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and look, I think you'll find that he'll sign for a lot less than what he was at the Phoenix for that 3-year deal. Mm. So if Perth are looking for a big man.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I don't know. I think Brizzy would be a really good spot for him for sure, especially if, you know, Baines is not there. Or, yeah, with 40, for sure, he would love a guy like that. And I think he needs to be on a team where he has some of those other bigs around him so that his load probably doesn't have to be as big and as much. So,
well, it had to be the Phoenix, didn't it? He virtually had no backup.
Yeah, it did. So, you know, maybe that's it. You know, if Brisbane would fit that mold well, I think with Ty and, you know, Rocco, if he's still around. And, yeah, I think that would be a good fit.
Well, he dominated Rocco in the games that they played. So if he gets to practice against him every week, he might be the guy that gets Rocco ready to be a top 10 draft pick.
Well, there you go. There you go. See, Brisbane it is.
All right, Cody. Well, let's wrap things up and get to start with game two.
Mm-hmm.
Championship Series, Melbourne United, the Tasmania Jack Jumpers, thanks to Tap Touch. So we'll try and come up with an exclusive again for this game. And you can check out all the odds at tabtouch.com.au or download the app. Back home, sold out MyState Bank Arena. Hopefully they're all wearing Jack Jumpers jerseys and they haven't changed over to Devils ones.
The Devils ones.
Just yet, Cody. Do the Jack Jumpers find a way to bounce back, though, at least in game two at home?
Look, I think they do. I don't expect United to have any kind of fall off, but I do not expect Tassie to play as bad as they did. Mm. You know, that's probably one of the worst games we've seen from them this year.
Yeah.
And look, a lot of that credit does go to Melbourne. Yep. But I think what we've seen from Tasmania this year is their ability to turn it around and adapt. And that's kind of been one of their strengths. So I reckon Tassie get that one at home and kind of return serve, which is what we want.
Mm.
You know, we want this to go to five because of the talent here and, you know, the potential for this to be a heck of a series. So, look, I do think that Tassie get it, but They've got to go get it because Melbourne's not going to fall over by any stretch.
Well, there's a few things. So how does, especially Jordan Crawford and Sean McDonald, who didn't have good game ones, how do they get themselves back into a groove while having Dally and Shaley in their face? And secondly, how do Will Magne and Marcus Lee bounce back against the Melbourne bigs?
Yeah, look, they've just got to scrap that first game out of their mind, honestly. It's It is tough for Crawford and McDonald with two of the best defenders in the league having a guard you. Mm. So they've got their work cut out for them, but, you know, you've got to go through the best if you want to win. So Tassie, it's tough. It is tough for them, and especially, you know, with a guy like McDonald who is still a development player.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a heck of a workload.
Yep.
So the bigs, again, they've just got to scrap it out of their mind too. You know, they've got to come ready to play. Because, it was complete domination from United on all fronts last time.
It's a tough place to go and play in general for an opposition team.
Mm-hmm.
After Dean Vickerman's comments last week, the whole state of Tasmania took offence to, like Scott Roth did.
Yep.
What sort of reaction can United's coaching staff and players expect on Friday?
Just constant boos. I think that's kind of what we'll hear throughout the full game is just boos. You know, anytime Dean arcs up to the refs or anything like that, there's going to be a almighty uproar, I'm sure. So, it's going to be one heck of a hostile environment for United.
But you don't expect game three to be the end of the series. Hopefully we've got something to still look ahead to next week.
Yeah, no, look, I don't expect it to be the end of the series. Look, from Melbourne's standpoint, I'm sure they want that to be the end of the end of the series. But from us as viewers, I think this finals has been, especially the two semi-final series, were so elite that we don't really want to sweep in the in the grand final.
Mm.
But yeah, look, I don't expect game three to be the last game. So look, I do think that Melbourne go home and keep that home court advantage going and get that one on Sunday. But yeah, look, I expect it to be these two games to be a lot better than what we saw in that first one.
Yeah, let's hope so. All right, so that's all ahead of us, Cody. We'll see how it all plays out. And either way, we'll come back next week and talk about what we've seen. Mm-hmm. Thank you to Hoop 7 and Tap Touch for making this show possible once more. I'm Chris Pike, and I'll sign off there and let the returning to the court, Cody Ellis, finish off with whatever's on your mind.
Yeah, look, hopefully we don't come back and talk and wrap the season up next week, because looking forward to these two games and looking forward to seeing how both teams adjust.
He'll make it for sure. Now that's why I backed him on Tap Touch.
Hey, Luke.
Yes, Gene Simmons.
He's probably the best when it comes to this stuff.
Thanks, Gene.
You've got the touch.
You got the touch. You got the power. Got the touch? Choose Tap Touch. Better your bet. Download the app today.
Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.